Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host. I should say one of your morning show hosts, and I've got two fun interviews this morning. The first one is with an old-time favorite guest here on KRFY, Rich Del Carlo, who really knows everything about birds. And when we finish talking about the summer birds, we're going to go ahead and listen to a pre-recorded interview from Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness that is going to be with a new employee over at Friends of Scotchman Peaks. But let's do a quick weather report, and then we'll introduce Rich and start talking about birds of summer. All right, well, if you've looked out your window or stepped outside yet this morning, you'll have noticed it is rainy and gray. What I can tell you about that is that it's going to be a little cool today with an 80% chance of showers, high of 59. And then tonight, of course, it'll also be cold with chances of showers and thunderstorms, but then it goes to partly cloudy. We can expect that for tomorrow, a high of 71. And then I have good news for you Sandpoint summer residents, and that is that we're going to have more clear, sunnier weather for the rest of the week through Monday, high of around 80 tomorrow on Thursday, and highs around 80 or a little bit above throughout the weekend and on to Monday. Hopefully that'll continue for a while. Nice to have rain. Because we like it in the summertime to get a little bit. We don't like it when it dries up, but we don't love it when it's cold and rainy in June. Now, I'm going to just mention some of the weekend events that happened, and the one I'd like to focus on was the Chafe 150 and versions of that. And for those of you who entered it or helped with the support stations or were on the sag wagons, you know that it was quite a day. We had thunder, lightning, rain, hail, snow, high winds, a little bit of flooding, and it really wasn't the most fun chafe ever, but I applaud the folks who finished and went out and did it, and I'm hoping you're all warmed up and home and have had a chance to recover from that. I was helping out at the KRFY, what we call the hydration station, but it was more of the drying station this year because I don't think anybody needed too much hydration. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead and introduce Rich. And Rich, you told me that you were out on a little bike ride over the weekend and had similar experience.
We were only in the weather and it had warmed up a bit, but still got caught in the rain and rained on us for 15 minutes, and I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't imagine how miserable those folks were on the
right
way up on the cabinets.
That's right. Well, at least you had the chance to turn around and go home.
Those exactly.
Those folks were pretty miserable, I've got to say. Yeah, so anyway, hopefully that won't carry on much longer and won't carry on for the birds of summer. I bet they don't like it either, which is our topic today.
It is our topic, and this this cool weather can actually be, you know, somewhat tough on the birds, especially if the insects aren't flying around. And because right now everything is, you know, nesting, feeding birds, baby birds. So
yes, you told me that you were doing a bird. Tell me what it was, a breeding survey last week.
For 30 years, I have been doing a breeding bird survey route that is an established route up in on the West Side Road in Bonner's Ferry. And I get to do that every year with my daughter. She actually likes doing it, and she is the scribe, and I basically count birds. And mostly it's through listening and being able to identify, document birds that are singing, and then what you see also. So there's 50 stops. You stop every half mile. With established stops, so they have years and years of data, and this happens all over the United States.
And how was it, Rich? How did it turn out? What did you see and hear?
Well, it was good. You know, I think over the years I can anecdotally say that there's less birds. and then there's areas that have changed where things have been logged or developed where things have changed a bit. Kind of, as we were talking about the weather, we started the count at 4 a.m. and it was 34 degrees in Bonner's Ferry yesterday, and it stayed that way until about almost 7. So it was, it's kind of an interesting summer.
That's chilly weather for birds that are coming from much warmer locations.
Definitely.
Yes. So that may affect the outcome of the nesting this year, yes?
It could, yeah. especially, you know, like this major hailstorms, more extreme weather, wind can blow nests out of trees, that kind of thing. But typically they are quite adaptable and tolerant to fairly extreme conditions. But those big events, that can be harmful.
It can be tough. Well, Rich, as we've mentioned already, our topic is summer birds, and a heck of a lot of birds are here right now, and there's some really fun ones. Do you want to just talk about some of the great birds that are here now?
Oh, you know, and this right now, this time of year, the birds are singing. So even if you don't know the bird, just getting out in the morning and just appreciating that, you know, kind of cacophony in places of many bird sounds is really, really fun. But so the migrants that we get here are, you know, warblers. We have 7 species of warblers and vireos. There's lots of red-eyed vireos and warbling vireos. Western tanagers, we were talking about them a little bit.
Really showy birds.
Oh, they're beautiful. They're
red.
And yellow and black. And yeah, they're really great. Lazuli buntings, black-headed grosbeaks.
And the lazuli buntings are just the brightest blue, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, they're so beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, the black-headed grosbeaks, they'll come to your feeder. So if you have sunflower seeds out, you can enjoy those. Another neotropical migrant is the Bullock's oriole. Beautiful orange and black bird, and that's kind of the bird that's here. The bird that we have here is similar to the Baltimore oriole that's in the East Coast.
Okay, and others too. Though we've got what about the bluebirds and the swallows? All of those guys.
Oh boy, there's lots of swallows, and it's interesting when the weather is cool. You'll notice the swallows are swarming over the water, like over Clark Fork River, sometimes over the lake, over the Pack River, and they are they're eating insects that are kind of stirring over the water. And it seems like when we have fairly cool and rainy days, that's their pattern. We we were out in Clark Fork this spring when birds were just arriving, and we literally saw thousands of swallows just swarming over the Clark Fork and doing that. Many different species of swallows. It was pretty cool. You know, there's habitats that you can go to see. To see the different birds. Like right now, if you take a walk up, if you were to hike in the mountains, like say you went up Scotchman's, you would hear and potentially see Townsend's warblers, hermit thrushes, fox sparrows, olive-sided flycatcher, vireos, yellow-rump warblers. And then down lower, you have red-eyed vireos in the cottonwood areas, Swainson's thrushes. There's a lot of Swainson's thrushes, and they have a beautiful song. And I think that probably people would really recognize that if they heard it, even if they didn't know it, they would recognize that sound. And people can access and learn those songs and the birds from with a free app that's called Merlin, if they're interested in doing that.
Yes, and let's talk about Merlin for just a minute. And I want to give a shout out to our great supporter, Laura Forsberg, for reminding us how great that app is. It's pretty easy to put on your phone and how it works.
Well, I don't know how it works. I mean, the mechanics of it, but It's a free app, and it has there's different bird packs that you can get. Like I use it when I go traveling around the world, basically, and I can load a country or a region with the birds that might be seen in that area. So it shows you a picture of the bird, describes the habitat and the bird with a range map, and then also it has sounds of the bird that you can play and listen to and learn that way. And then also there has the ability to record birds and will actually, as the bird is recorded, it will say, oh, that was a McGilvery's warbler or house finch or whatever. And it's not completely 100% accurate, but it's really a pretty effective, valuable learning tool. I use it every day.
And what I find nice about it is that I find that, I have a short memory for bird calls. I have ones that I remember from when I was young, but as I'm learning them, it seems like I need to hear them again and again and again and be reminded. And it's a great way to help us learn our bird songs.
Totally, and I do too. Yes. Even you know, I think I have a certain warbler down, and then I go to a different spot and I go, oh, is that a yellow rump? Or, oh no, that was a Nashville. And yes. You know, I'm going, oh yeah, but. So, and then, you know, another thing about learning bird songs is understanding the habitat and the different zones, biomes where birds are. And, for example, Nashville warblers love the kind of the ocean spray habitat, whereas Townsend's warblers are in the more high in the canopy of a coniferous forest.
Yeah, and so it really kind of helps you understand where to find them because you're locating them.
Exactly. And yes. It's not to say that you wouldn't hear a Townsend's warbler in a cottonwood, but it's when you're trying to learn those birds, knowing where they would most likely be is very helpful.
Yes. And they really are in certain habitats. We're not going to find, for example, that western bluebird in a deep, dark forest, right?
Right.
We'll find them.
Right. They like more open meadows, edges. In fact, right now there is a there's a mountain bluebird that at least a week or so ago was feeding babies in the bluebird box in the meadow up at Pine Street Woods.
Oh. That's really neat and nice to know. So listeners, if you're wanting to have your first sighting, if you have a bird list and you're working on improving it or increasing it, maybe that ought to be a little field trip.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, I agree. Right. Well, Rich, we've got more to talk about as it relates to the birds of summer. And they are nesting right now. And so there's some kind of important things we as humans should be thinking about, yes, with their habitat.
Yeah, you know, and I has as we were talking about before the show, what kind of inspired me to reach out to you and get on and propose an interview was I was in my yard and I just happened to look over and see I have a service berry, and it has a lot of aphids in it now, and I realized that there was a family of chickadees, chestnut-backed chickadees. The babies had fledged, and the parent was feeding the babies aphids. And there was also a pair of cedar waxwings in there. And so I have fruit trees and roses and other things that right now have quite a few aphids on it. You know, it's a yearly thing. This year seems to be a little worse, and people tend to want to control aphids. But in closer examination of your plants, if you look at them, there's probably ladybugs on there. So they are eating aphids. And, you know, even the seed-eating birds require the protein and the nutrients that the insects give for their babies. So it's pretty important to not control every aphid on your property, because they're providing, and so many other insects as well, are providing food for baby birds. And then in the fall, when the birds start heading south, they need that. They need to just start chowing down on everything, and the source of the you know, the insects provide a huge amount of protein and fat for them to be able to do their journey. So, being aware of what's going on in your yard, and not necessarily manicuring it to where there's no pests or weeds or whatever is
important
and beneficial in the long run.
Yes,
and plus it's less work.
Right, and of course we know that songbirds, so many of our birds are in decline, and if we can do whatever we can to help them, we want to do that. For example, you know, I'm still feeding birds in the summer some black sunflower seeds and suet, but that doesn't certainly, as you just mentioned, that doesn't cover all their nutritional needs, and they're out getting bugs. And, you know, it's amazing how many of the bird species are feeding on these insects and the ones that are detrimental that we want them to feed on.
Right.
Another, you gave me another example earlier before we went on air about something you witnessed with hornet's nests.
Yes. You know, it's kind of, even, you know, if you just sit in your yard for, you know, if you're out there having a glass of wine or coffee or whatever, and just start noticing bird behavior, you can find a bird nest, or you can understand what they're eating. And we were just sitting on the deck one evening, and we noticed that a couple of tanagers, western tanagers, were on the eave of the chicken house, and then they flew under the eave, and we're like, what are they doing? And we went down there and realized that these western tanagers were flying up under the eave, and as they were still in flight, they didn't land. They were grabbing the larvae out of the paper wasp nest, that the flat nests that have the white larvae in there, they were just picking them out of there.
Yeah, those ones I'm always trying to brush off right. with my broom or spray them, which I try not to do. Yes. So they're helping us.
Right, right. So, you know, I mean, obviously pesticides have a bit of a place, but we've gotten to a point where they're being overused, abused in places, and they are having a huge impact on not just birds.
All life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, life is supposed to be in balance. And so we need the insects, we need the birds, we need, you know, everything.
Yes.
It's really easy to, there's one pesticide that is the most widely used pesticide in the world, imidacloprid. Which is like merit or something like that, that you would use as a systemic that you would like to control bronze birch borer or many other insects. And it's so easy. You just pour it on the ground. It's taken up by the tree. But that has a residual in the plant. So it's not only killing the insects, but also potentially harming birds and animals that feed on those insects. And then also
yes, if they fed depleting off the plants
they
might
exactly.
be bothering.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
it's not a good deal.
Yeah.
So we want to really be careful about the pesticides that we're using now.
Right.
And that's come up. We spent a lot of time here at KRFY on the Tuesday morning show talking about pollinators and, all the
right.
insects that are beneficial. And, of course, these are the things that harm them, too.
Yeah, bees, water, butterflies.
Yes, so it's really an issue, and we need to all be thinking about it. We really do. All right, so we've learned that it's so great that our beautiful songbirds that are here can help us with pest problems.
Yes, and I was just thinking about another bird that is pretty common in town that maybe people aren't necessarily aware of, and that's the western flycatcher. It's a little green, kind of grayish drab bird, but pretty common. And as you drive around, I know the sound, I can hear it. You could learn it from Merlin, but That actually is a bird that will nest, like, even under your deck. Any shady, dark place, under the deck, under a post of a deck, against a wall. And it's pretty interesting that they kind of choose that to nest in.
And they're big bug eaters, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
They don't just catch flies.
No, right. but they do catch flying insects.
Yes, they do. So, and they're pretty bird, even though they might seem a little drab. They're very interesting to watch because they're all over the place looking for bugs.
They are. And typically a flycatcher habit would be just to perch on a branch, fly out, and then come back to the same branch.
Yeah. So they're a good one. So folks, the birds are helping us. And having talked about that, let's talk about how we help them with nesting. Bird boxes, just keeping your shrubs trimmed. What do you think about that, Rich?
Well, there's certainly birds that require cavities, woodpeckers, kestrels, swallows, bluebirds, nest in boxes, providing nest boxes or actual snags or even a tree with a dead spot in it can provide a cavity for a nesting bird. And that's, you know, those are obvious. We know about those, but, there's so many birds that we have no idea where their nest is. Because the way that they are secretive in building their nest.
Of course. Yes.
So they don't attract predators or cowbirds. And so, even myself, who is pretty aware of bird behavior, I'm always surprised. It's like, oh my gosh, I had no idea there was a nest there. So, obviously things need to be done in the summer, but if you can't avoid doing major trimming or, you know, completely redoing your landscape, because I guarantee that there's going to be nests in there.
Right. And so better times for that kind of major pruning might be earlier in the spring
yeah.
or fall
yeah.
when all the
yeah. And
nests
it's not
are.
To say that you can't prune, but yeah, it before they're there, it's a little better. And then of course, you know, I always have to talk about cats.
I was hoping we'd go to cats because there's a cat in my neighborhood that I'm keeping an eye on and trying to keep away from my little bird feeder. It's an issue.
It is an issue, and it's a big one, and especially just the, like we had mentioned, that, you know, birds are in decline, and and I'm sure everybody knows that you know, that cats eat birds. The other issue is windows. Those two things actually are the biggest, the biggest factors in decline of these, species.
Yes. And of course, habitat is in there too.
It is, but it's actually not as big.
Yeah. Wow. And
pesticides.
Yes. Well, there are a few things homeowners can do about cats. And one is they can keep the cats indoors. Not everybody can do that, but we can do things like bell them or have them wear those ruffly collars but of course, best is to let them live inside, right?
Yep.
And maybe for a cat owner, you wouldn't put out a bird feeder right outside of your door because that's such a attractant.
And it is. It
then
is.
They get
it is.
Eaten
yep.
up.
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty sad to see the birds eaten up by the cats.
Mm-hmm. And even if you think your cat is, you know, always just fat and old, I mean, they are still very, very good hunters.
Yes, I've seen cats catch a hummingbird, and you wouldn't think a cat would catch a hummingbird, and that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
All right, well cat owners, we're not against you, but please try to help with the birds.
Absolutely. You want to talk about hummingbirds?
Sure, let's talk about hummingbirds. They must be nesting right now.
They are, yeah. So we have three species of hummingbirds here. Smallest bird in North America is a calliope hummingbird, and the males are the ones with the little like purple stripes on the throat.
So they're pretty.
They're beautiful, yeah.
Yes.
Black-chinned hummingbird and then the Rufus. And they, so, and if you have a hummingbird feeder, they come to hummingbird feeders. They need them, I think. Four cups of water, one cup of sugar, just white sugar. That's all you need.
You don't have to diet or anything.
And actually you shouldn't diet. You know, when you think about it, nectar, like if you see plant nectar, it's clear. So I'm not sure why they decided that
it should be
in a red and yellow feeder, why you need the liquid red, but it's not necessary. And in fact, we're not supposed to eat red dye. So why would a tiny little hummingbird?
Good point. Yeah. And we've done a whole hour on hummingbirds. They're so interesting. They only live in the Americas, correct? They don't live in Europe.
No, they don't.
Which is fun. Yeah. And there's so many species, but we have our fun three ones here. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I've noted this, and I want your input, Rich, and that's that it seems to me when they are on their nests, they're not at the feeders quite as much, and then they all come back.
Right.
And I don't understand it.
Well, I'm not sure why they aren't regularly coming to the feeder. I've still got males and females coming to my feeder.
Good.
But they are also feeding their, so I don't, they're not bringing nectar back to the nest. The nectar is for them, but they are bringing insects back to the nest. So
maybe
even hummingbirds are catching flying insects or gleaning small insects off of leaves or wherever.
Okay, so maybe there are fewer that are just coming for a little sip.
Yeah,
of
and it'll pick
nectar
up again as when the babies come off. Then they really are at their.
Yes,
it's important to keep those feeders clean. It's been a little easier with these cool conditions, you know. When we have the real hot days, it tends to kind of cook that solution. So it's important, even if they're not. Especially if they're not feeding, if it's kind of been sitting there for, you know, a week.
Might change it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's good idea. And you don't need, you know, especially with that, it starts getting that black mold in the feeder or around the base, and that's bad.
Definitely bad, yes. Well, all right. So we're talking about feeding our birds of summer, and we know how to feed the hummingbirds. What other food would be good to have out summertime?
Well, I still put out suet. Because the flickers, pileated woodpeckers, hairy downy woodpeckers come.
Chickadees like it.
Chickadees like it. Yeah, blackbirds mm-hmm. come. I mean, everything kind of takes a little peck at it, but the woodpeckers primarily. Chickadees do like it. Starlings, they come, which you know.
Yes.
I know. You know, but we when we were in Africa. We probably saw, I don't know, 8 different species of starlings, and they are beautiful. So, you know, I've gotten a little more tolerant of starlings over the years.
They will raid nests,
and
right?
They will raid nests. They do make a very, very. They're probably the dirtiest nesting birds that I've ever seen, but. You know, I mean, and so they eat insects too. So,
okay.
They are, you know, they're providing somewhat of a benefit.
So a small case to be made for the starling, I guess. I'll take that under consideration.
Yeah. So, you know, right. And then I was just thinking about another couple of birds that come back that, you know, so we have the osprey. They're here. They come back and they leave and come back every year. And then spotted sandpipers.
Ah.
So a little... like if you go along the pack, basically any waterway now along the shore, you'll see a little shorebird that bobs its tail. That's a spotted sandpiper. And they nest on the ground. They're pretty cool.
And
snipe.
And killdeer,
right?
They're fun. All those fun water birds.
Another bird that comes, there's not many of them, but there's a few fields around. There's a field on Hickey Road where they nest, and that's the bobolink.
Oh, very important.
And they have the most beautiful song. They fly over these fields with this warbling, bubbly belly song, and they nest right on the ground. They actually winter in Argentina.
Wow.
So they fly all the way to the Pampas of Argentina and back to as far north as the, well, I'm not sure how far they get up into Canada, but probably into Saskatchewan. Primarily, they're a grassland bird.
And they're a bird of such special concern that they have their own society, right? The Bobolink Society.
They do, yeah.
Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to try and support
their... And they, you know, they nest in... they primarily like timothy, and of course that's, you know, that's a hay and it gets cut. So if people can delay cutting those fields into July, that helps them out. They have the fastest, and I they must have developed this over the years because of haying, but they have the fastest nest cycle, from what I understand, of any bird. So they just get right to it, and all the birds are doing that. You know, they start finding a territory, finding a mate, and building a nest absolutely as fast as they can as soon as they get here.
And some will have more than one batch of babies every year.
Bluebirds will potentially, if say for example a yellow warbler loses a nest early. It will attempt to re-nest, but they won't have two
multiple
broods.
Okay.
They can try another attempt, but not two broods. But bluebirds sometimes have two broods, and starlings probably have eight.
Yes, and what about robins? It seems like robins will go again.
Yeah.
I think, yes.
Yeah, they do.
And turkeys, maybe.
I don't think turkeys do.
Oh, good. That's good then. Yeah, it's so interesting. Well, all right, Rich, we've talked about what to feed them. We've talked a bit more about nesting. Water's pretty important for birds in summer.
It is. A bird bath, and even, moving water, a little water feature. When it gets hot, a little misting, hose or whatever. But yeah, super important.
Yeah, they've got to have some water near the feeder.
And right now, my driveway has puddles, so they're using that for a bird bath.
Yep. So, yes, water. Got to think about water if you're going to be feeding. And then as we're winding down, we've got a few more minutes to talk before our next interview. Would you mind sharing with us some of your favorite birding places where you see some of these great summer birds? Mm. Where do you head out to?
Well, like I mentioned, right now, any hike up into the mountains, all the trails, there's warblers and vireos, potentially hawks. There's a place where I like to go is there's an area called Twin Creek down off of Clark Fork, Johnson Creek, the canoe ride out Johnson Creek is wonderful. Lots of birds singing. There's always eagles and...
Yes. And that's out past Clark Fork also, not too far from Twin Creek. That Johnson Creek, that's the one you're talking about?
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you basically just go through Clark Fork and...
Cross the river.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Trout Creek is good. Any of the, kind of the wildlife management areas...
Even Gold Hill, I think.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Because Pine Street Woods.
Yes. We don't have to drive hours to find great spots.
No.
And I think we'd be remiss not to mention the National Wildlife Refuge up at Bonners.
Absolutely.
That's a great one. They even do birding classes there.
They do.
Yeah, yes. They do.
And so. I have a couple of friends that I know the manager and her husband. They are really, really good birders. They're good friends, but they do a great job up there.
Yeah, that's a fun spot to go and learn about birds. It really is.
Yeah, and it's just has really nice habitat. It's, you know, they're visible, accessible. Round Lake, that's a great spot.
I agree. I was just out there yesterday, and they're just going crazy out there. Birds everywhere.
Yeah, there's kind of a specialty bird that is kind of been hanging out there, and that's a blackback woodpecker. And my friend Kevin and Julie, they were down there. They didn't even have binoculars. They said, "We saw a blackback woodpecker." I said, "Really? What did it look like?" I said, "Well, it had a black back and a yellow and yellow on the head." I said, "Wow, that is, you are right. You saw a blackback woodpecker."
Wow, I am going to watch for that. I wonder where they saw that.
It's not too far from the trailhead. If you kind of go to the right when you start there out of the parking lot, seems to be hanging out in there.
There's some pretty mature trees in there that they might like.
They like mature trees, but what those woodpeckers really like are kind of dying trees, where there's bark beetles in there, and they actually, if you see a tree that where the bark is kind of scaled off, even a pile of bark at the base of the tree, that's either hairy, downy, or the blackback that do that. There's not many species that actually kind of scrape that, you know, pick that bark off.
Okay, well, that's going to be a goal of mine the next time I get out there, to watch for those guys.
Right, and one other thing I'd like to say is about the pileated. You know, I've had people call and say, this pileated are making holes in my cedar tree. Are they going to kill it? And what the pileated are actually doing is going in there and getting carpenter ants. So they're going into decayed wood, where the carpenter ants are, and grabbing the ants. So
another case of a bird getting rid of what we would consider a pest insect.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you, pileated woodpeckers.
Yeah. Plus, they're so beautiful. They are.
Cool. Yeah. They're so cool to see. Yeah. Well, Rich, we're going to come to an end of this really fun interview. I just look forward to any talk that I have the opportunity to have with you. But to sum up, is there anything you'd like to add about the birds of summer, or just reemphasize?
Well, just reemphasize, just, you know, take a few moments just to sit and watch and kind of learn bird behavior, listen. Like I said, you don't necessarily have to know every bird, but just becoming a little more present and aware of what we have here. And anytime you take a hike, you know, stop and smell the roses.
That's right. And try to be good to the birds that live around us.
Definitely.
And yeah. And watch those pesticides.
Right.
And cats. All right. Well, with that, we're going to finish this really great interview. I want to thank you, Rich Del Carlo, local birder and just a great birding resource for our Sandpoint community. We so appreciate it when you come in and share your thoughts. I just can't say enough great things about this talk. We're going to go to a song break and then be back with a second interview with an update from Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness. But as we go out, I want to thank you, Rich. It's been great.
Thanks, Julie. Have a great day.
All right. And Rich, you picked this song. It's Seals and Crofts' Summer Breeze.